coming up on this special edition of The Green from Delaware Public Media. The focus of our Canada Conversations turns to the race for Delaware's lone U.S. House seat. We'll hear from incumbent Democrat Lisa Blunt Rochester and Republicans Lee Murphy and Scott Walker. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. We also check in with political analysts Tom Kovac and Daryl Scott for their take on local legislative primaries, plus a closer look at the Republican primary in House District 22. It's all next on this special edition of The Green, where Delaware explores its common ground. But first, the latest news from NPR. Welcome to this special edition of The Green from Delaware Public Media. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. We continue our series of candidate conversations, part of Delaware Public Media's 2018 election coverage and the Delaware debates we're producing again this fall with the University of Delaware's Center for Political Communication. We've reached out to all candidates running in statewide races and invited them to sit down with us for an interview. Candidates in each race are asked the same set of questions to allow you to get to know them and compare them. In addition to airing these interviews on The Green, the interviews will be available at DelawarePublic.org and DelawareDebates.org right through Election Day in November. Today, we shift our focus to the race for the U.S. House seat currently held by Congresswoman Lisa Blunt Rochester. And we start with the Democratic incumbent, who won the seat 2 years ago to become the first woman and first person of color to represent Delaware in Congress. Here is our candidate conversation with Congresswoman Lisa Blunt Rochester.
Well, first off, we ask everyone, why are you running for another term in the U.S. House?
Well, first, I want to say how humbled and grateful I am to be representing Delaware right now in Congress. I think it's probably one of the most pivotal times in the history of our country, and to be able to represent a whole state and all parts of our state has been a real honor. I am running again because I believe our work is still yet to be finished. We still have a lot more to do on many issues, and I'm looking for the voters to send me back to Washington to represent all of Delaware.
So what should voters know about your qualifications for the job that perhaps they don't already know about you?
Well, I think many people might know or might not know that I've had the opportunity to serve in different capacities here in Delaware. Started off actually as an intern in the office of then Congressman Carper back in 1987. And so Congress was not something new to me in terms of the importance and the work ethic that is required. And so I worked my way up and able to serve in different capacities as our Deputy Secretary of Health and Social Services, Secretary of Labor, and Head of State Personnel, and also run a nonprofit. But one of my greatest exciting achievements is actually raising two children who went to Delaware Public Schools and graduated, and then graduated from college and are now great contributors to Delaware. So I think those are some things that people might not know that I think impact how I serve our state.
Many pundits and analysts have framed this midterm election as a referendum on President Trump. Specifically in some House races, we've seen some saying that the possibility of a democratically controlled House moving to impeach the president, making that kind of a campaign issue. So for you, is this election a referendum on President Trump and the possibility of impeachment, or at the very least maybe more congressional inquiry into the president through various committees if Democrats take control?
Well, I think there were a lot of things wrapped up into that one question. Mm-hmm. First of all, the reality is the House is going to change dramatically. Just the sheer number of retirements and changes mean that we're going to have a different Congress. And my first concern is, are people coming to Congress like me that really want to get things done, that, you know, feel that in order to solve the big problems that we have, we can't just be D's, R's, and I's. We've got to come together. So one is, you know, looking at what Congress will look like in the fall. It's going to be different. The second piece that you mentioned is impeachment. I think at this point it's premature. We have an investigation going on, and we need to let the investigation play out. And I think one of my big concerns is that we not impede that investigation. And so, you know, right now our focus needs to be winning the House in a strong way so that we can have those checks and balances that the American people want to see.
no matter what happens in the House in November, the atmosphere is likely to remain contentious. How will you work with colleagues from the other party to tackle these pressing issues that you're talking about?
You know, it's a great question because when I ran the first time, I really only focused on two major things. One was jobs in the economy. Mm-hmm. That was the what. And then the how was about bringing people together. And so in the first 20 months that I've been on this job, I've demonstrated that by actually signing a pledge of civility with my freshman class, which we expanded out to others, and spoke on the floor of the House on Valentine's Day about the fact that we're not going to agree on everything, but we can at least respect each other. Then I actually co-hosted events such as a Martin Luther King breakfast with John Lewis as our keynote speaker. I hosted a March Madness event, and I don't even really care about basketball that much. No offense, Dad, but I wanted us to, again, see each other as humans and trying to find common ground. And another event we co-hosted with two Republicans and another Democrat, Jamie Raskin and myself, was a night at the Holocaust Museum, where after a private tour, we then sat down in a room with no cameras, no staff, and just talked about immigration and how can we find common ground. So I've already, in this first term, got many examples of bipartisan bills that I've co-sponsored, and I think that's the stuff that you don't see a lot on television, is mm-hmm. the bipartisan work that really is happening, like us passing into law a career technical education bill. That's major for our employers and for those individuals seeking work. So I think the environment, I try to do what I learned here in Delaware, and I try to spread it in Washington.
Well, certainly there is a partisan divide on the $1.5 trillion tax cut enacted this past term. And polls consistently show less than half the country approves of it. What is your message to voters about the impact of these cuts to date and if they should remain in place?
You know, this is probably one of the biggest areas. We had a teletown hall meeting, and incredibly, 11,000 people joined our teletown hall meeting on the tax bill. And it ranged, you know, here in Delaware, from people who said, you know, this is working well for me, to many people who said it's not, mm-hmm. that they maybe aren't even seeing the impact of it personally. You know, what I tell people is that this is bigger than a one-time refund. This is about a debt that we put not just on ourselves, but on our children and our grandchildren. And so it's incumbent upon us to sit down together and say, how do we continue to strengthen our business community and create an environment where they can thrive, but at the same time not put a burden of debt on us, and also potentially risk programs like Social Security and Medicare that may have to be cut because of this tax bill. So, you know, I think we need to go back to the table. And, you know, I think many of us agree on principles like simplification. We agree on principles, you know, that the burden should be shared. But this was not the right path. And I think that's why it's bearing itself out in the polls.
Building on that, generally speaking, how do you rate the health of the U.S. economy? And if elected, what are your priorities to make it stronger?
Well, you know, I think that back to kind of short-term, long-term, mm-hmm. you know, part of my concern is the long term and the growth that we see, that not be a spurt and then just peters out. I'm very much focused on the future of work. It's one of my main priorities, and some of it comes from my background at labor. Some of it comes from the fact that there are 6.7 million jobs that are unfilled right now and individuals who don't have the skills to match the jobs. So for me, I see us thinking about what are the barriers that prevent people from going to work, such as a prison record for a low-level nonviolent crime. We just introduced this week a bill, H.R. 6677, which is called the Clean Slate Act, and it's bipartisan. You've got the think tank on the left, the Center for American Progress, and the think tank on the right, Freedom Works with the Koch brothers, working with me on something that, again, helps individuals who are coming out of prison, helps the business community, and helps all of us as a society. So I think coming up with those win-win strategies, those things that we find common ground, and looking at where do we want to be as a country. We're not agrarian like we used to be. We still have strong farms. We're not industrial like we used to be. We still have some manufacturing. But where are we going for the future with artificial intelligence, machine learning, autonomous vehicles? That excites me, and that's something I think Democrats, Republicans, and Independents can get together and get around as a country.
You mentioned immigration earlier, and a Pew Research Center poll earlier this summer found immigration to be the top concern among voters heading into these midterms. The issue obviously touches on a number of topics, from the status of the DACA program and separation of families at the border to the funding of President Trump's border wall, which the president has threatened a government shutdown over. If elected, what approach toward immigration would you seek to pursue in Congress?
Well, I think what is interesting is that we're having this such a politicized debate when immigration historically has been a bipartisan issue. We all experienced the passing of Senator John McCain, a true hero to our country. And, you know, it is people like John McCain who wanted us to have a comprehensive immigration plan. And I think that's where we need to be focused. We need to be looking at this in a comprehensive way, and we need to be recognizing the fact that our safety and security and our, you know, welcoming of people from other countries are not mutually exclusive. As a matter of fact, I talked to farmers. Immigration is important to them. I've talked to tech people this week. Immigration is important to them. I've talked to individuals down in Sussex County who come from the background of trying to serve people who are coming from different countries. It shouldn't be either or. We're one country, and we're built on immigrants, people who were enslaved, and people who were native to this country. We can't go back. We shouldn't go back.
Healthcare was also high up on the list of voter concerns. Arguments in a Texas case that could strike down the Affordable Care Act as unconstitutional will be heard this fall. If that suit succeeds, though, it would also eliminate popular ACA provisions like protections for people with pre-existing conditions. With that possibility as a dropback, what do you see as the appropriate path forward when it comes to addressing healthcare?
You know, I hear this as the biggest issue up and down our state. You know, I've heard it from small businesses. I've heard it from large businesses. I've heard it from my dental hygienist while she was in my mouth that her premiums are $440 a month. It, to me, is one of the most pressing issues. And while the Affordable Care Act needed fixes to it, no bill is perfect. We don't scrap this incredible landmark bill. And I think that's the part that concerns so many people. People with disabilities have come up to me and are concerned, you know, about pre-existing conditions. Parents who have children up to age 26 on their plans are concerned. And I think what we need to really be focused on are, what are those things that we can, again, come together on? For example, the cost of prescription drugs. I haven't heard anybody say that that's not something we should tackle. So I think, you know, as we go into the fall, this is the conversation. You know, there are two things to me that are huge and for our country. One is the healthcare issue, and the second is infrastructure. That's a potential opportunity. It's a win-win. It's jobs, it's building our roads, bridges, our infrastructure with our water. We have water issues in our state, and broadband internet. So to me, the issue of immigration, the issue of healthcare, and the issue of infrastructure are the areas we should be focusing as a country.
And finally, is there an issue you feel is not getting the attention it deserves in this election cycle, and how would you address it if you're elected?
That's a great question. An issue that's not getting the attention. You know, I think an issue that is getting attention, but I don't feel we are really addressing it, is the divide that we have. Almost every group that I speak to, this question comes up. How are you able to even exist in that environment? Or people will say to me, I'm praying for you. I get a lot of I'm praying for you. And I take those prayers. But I feel that we as a country will not be able to deal with those big issues I just mentioned if we don't find the way to have courageous conversations about the challenges, because if we don't face something, we can't fix it. And so when I saw what happened in Charlottesville, that shook me to the core. And not that these things didn't exist, but it's now in our face. And then when I think about it, it's the courageous conversations, but it's also the coming together to do that real problem solving. Like, we didn't talk about gun violence, but that is an issue that's plaguing many communities and schools. We in Congress, one of the things we could do in our, I'm on the Education and Workforce Committee, we could be having hearings on that. We're not yet. And so I think there are areas that once we come together and have these conversations, and I know it's possible, I've been a part of these kinds of things. And so for those who think, you know, oh, that's not possible, it is possible. The fact that I'm sitting here today, I carry with me, many people know, a scarf, and it was a replica of the voter oath card that my great-great-great-grandfather signed with an X because he couldn't write his name. I'm the great-great-great-granddaughter of a slave from Georgia, and now today I'm the first woman and the first person of color to represent the first state. I know it's possible because I know what we're made of as a country. We just have to remember that. We just have to lean in and lean on each other and make it happen.
Our thanks to Congresswoman Lisa Blunt Rochester, Democratic candidate for U.S. House, for her time. Next up on The Green, we hear from Republican candidate Lee Murphy. This is Delaware Public Media. This is a special edition of The Green on Delaware Public Media, and I'm Tom Byrne. The next in our series of candidate conversations in the race for U.S. House features the first of two Republicans running, Lee Murphy. This is Murphy's first run for statewide office, though he did previously run unsuccessfully for Newcastle County Council in 1984 and State Senate in 2000 and 2002. Here is our candidate conversation with Lee Murphy.
Well, first off, we ask everyone, why are you running for U.S. House?
Yeah, that's a great question. Every candidate should be able to answer that that question. Well, the obvious reason is that our current representative, our current congresswoman, in my mind, does not represent the core values, the values of most of the wonderful residents of this great state. She has aligned herself with Nancy Pelosi, Maxine Waters, on just about every issue, and to say, and that just doesn't represent me, it doesn't represent my family, it doesn't represent the majority of citizens in this state. I've lived here a long time, my whole adult life. I raised a family here, have grandchildren here, and the people in Delaware are more in the center, their values, and we need a representative in Washington on the federal level that represents those values.
Also wants to ask what voters should know about your qualifications for the job that perhaps they don't already know about.
Well, my qualifications for this job, I've lived a great life. I've had a great life. I moved here when I got married, raised my family here. I was a school teacher initially here in the Catholic Diocese of Wilmington. My family expanded. I had to move to another career. I worked on the railroad with Amtrak. I was a train conductor and a locomotive engineer. While my kids were growing up here, I ran for county council. I ran for the Delaware State Senate. I was the head of my civic association, my church parish council. So just like all of us, I've tried to give back my entire life and make whatever I was involved in, a better place.
I want to move on to some more issue-oriented questions. Many pundits and analysts have framed this midterm election as a referendum on President Trump, and specifically in House races, some have made the possibility of a Democratic-controlled House moving to impeach the president a campaign issue. Is this election a referendum on President Trump or the possibility of impeachment, or at the very least, maybe more congressional inquiry into the president through various committees? Should the Democrats take control of the House?
Well, one of the reasons I'm running is I do not want the Democrats to take control of the House. I support the president, and I support his policies, and I want to go to Washington to be a part of what's happening right now in our country, the prosperity that we're enjoying. I want to bring that back to Delaware. Certainly, if the Democrats take control of the House, and I don't think they will, They do want to proceed, and they do want to impeach the president. They've drawn back on that, but there are true feelings that will happen. I don't want to see that happen.
No matter which way the House goes in November, the atmosphere will likely, though, remain contentious. How would you work with colleagues from the other party to tackle pressing issues if you're elected?
Well, in my whole adult life, anything that I was ever involved in, nobody agreed on everything. And somehow we came to a consensus, whether it was at my swim club or in my community or at the church, and we got things done and we moved ahead. There was a time in Delaware, it was called the Delaware Way, where Democrats and Republicans during the campaign, they went at each other. But when the campaign was over, they got things done. Okay, I'd like to see that, quote, Delaware Way, I'd like to see that go to Washington.
Certainly there is a partisan divide on the $1.5 trillion tax cut enacted last year. Polls consistently show right now less than 50% of the country approves of it. What's your message to voters about the impact of these cuts so far and if they should remain in place?
Well, I think the tax cuts should remain in place, and I'm all in favor of the next round of tax cuts that the president is advocating. I think it's too early to see the real benefits of these tax cuts. I think it'll probably be a year or more before we see the true benefits of the tax cuts. But I know I've met a lot of business owners. They're expanding their business. They can't find enough qualified people to work, many of my friends. So the effects of the tax cuts, especially for businesses and corporations, they are being seen. And there's definitely an air of confidence out there in our community, and I think nationwide. Not so much in Delaware, but nationwide for sure.
A Pew Research Center poll earlier this summer found that immigration was the top concern among voters heading into these midterms. This issue obviously touches on a lot of different topics, from the status of the DACA program, separation of families at the border, to the funding of President Trump's border wall, which the president has threatened a government shutdown over. If elected, what approach toward immigration would you seek to pursue in Congress?
My approach is, first of all, the wall. I'm in favor of the wall being built. I'm in favor of securing our borders. I'm in favor of legal immigration. The legal immigration system in our country has to be done over. It needs a redo. It's not working effectively. As far as illegal immigration, the people that are born in this country, DACA children, under the Constitution, they're United States citizens. Their parents who came here illegally, broke the law, should have a pathway to citizenship if they're hardworking people that have a job or in the military, but they must pay the penalty for coming here illegally, whether that's restitution, whether that's jail time. There must be a penalty for breaking the law. After that penalty is paid, I believe in a pathway to citizenship. If you're here illegally and you've broken the law and you're a criminal, you should be deported. No questions asked.
Healthcare also high up on the list of voter concerns for these midterms. Arguments in a Texas case that could strike down the Affordable Care Act as unconstitutional will be heard this fall. If that suit succeeds, though, it would also eliminate popular ACA provisions like protections for people with pre-existing conditions. With that possibility as a backdrop, what do you see as the appropriate path forward when it comes to addressing health care in this country?
Well, the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, has proven not to work. People's premiums are through the roof, and I am in favor of a full repeal of Obamacare. And then we're left with the big question of what's next. Mm-hmm. It's a very complex problem. I don't have all the answers. I've talked to doctors and healthcare officials here during my campaign, and I wish I had a definitive plan right now. But I believe all people should have access to healthcare. One thing that the president advocates and I advocate is that we should have competition across state lines. If I want to buy health care in Wyoming, I should be able to buy health care in Wyoming. So we need to drive down the price. We need to make it a competitive playing field when it comes to health care. And yes, there's a lot of unanswered questions, and I want to work towards a solution.
And finally, we ask each candidate, is there an issue you feel is not getting the attention it deserves during this election cycle, and how would you address it if elected?
Well, one of the main reasons I'm running this year is the drug and opioid crisis. This is a very serious problem that literally threatens our next generation. We have at least one person overdosing here in Delaware a day. We have over 400 people projected to die from overdoses in 2018, just in Delaware. Nationwide, 67,000 people. This is a personal issue for me. I battled this epidemic with my daughter. She was addicted to drugs. She found treatment eventually, and unfortunately it was through the criminal justice system. But we went through many, many 30-day rehabs, 30 here, there, all down the East Coast. They didn't work. My daughter successfully was in recovery for many, 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 many years. She opened a business, raised a family. But unfortunately, 3 years ago, she passed away. So it's a personal thing. Right now, we have cookie-cutter solutions, nothing that really works. We need to find a solution when an addict is ready to say, look, I've had enough of this. I want to go in recovery. We have to have the resources there. And that recovery may take 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, 24 months. But when that person is ready to recover, we have to have the resources there for that person. This is not an easy problem. An addict is an addict until they want to turn their life around. We have no control over that. But the resources have to be there. And we have to take the stigma away from people that are on drugs. This is not something people choose to be. Okay, and it touches so many lives, so many families, and I want to make this a priority when I go to Washington. The president's allocated $6 billion, but that money has to be spent in the right areas. Otherwise, it's just going to be a waste. It's a complicated problem. I don't want to talk about it. I want to do something about it.
Our thanks to Lee Murphy, Republican candidate for U.S. House, for his time. Next up on The Green, we hear from the other Republican in this race, Scott Walker. You're listening to Delaware Public Media. This is a special edition of The Green on Delaware Public Media, and I'm Tom Byrne. We continue with our series of candidate conversations in the race for U.S. House. This one features the second of the two Republicans running, Scott Walker. Walker most recently ran for U.S. House in 2016 as a Democrat, losing in a six-way primary. Here is our candidate conversation with Scott Walker. We start off by asking you why did you decide to run for U.S. House this cycle?
Well, I'm not satisfied with the way things are. And if elected, I'm going to get Delaware back on its feet again. And so we've got a lot of problems, very, very serious problems, and that's why I'm running.
What should voters know about your qualifications for the job, perhaps something that they don't already know about you?
Well, they should know that I received a good technical education at the University of Delaware, where I got a BA. I attended graduate school for business at the University of Delaware, and I've had a lifetime of victories and defeats, and I'm used to hard times, and I'm used to analyzing problems and solving them. And I've recently become very religious lately, and so I have God on my side now, and with that, I think we're going to conquer every problem that comes up.
Let's talk about some of the issues in this election cycle. Many pundits and analysts are framing these midterms as a referendum on President Trump.
And specifically in some House races, some have made the possibility of a Democratic-controlled House moving to impeach the president a campaign issue. My question for you is this election a referendum on President Trump and perhaps the possibility of impeachment or at the very least more congressional inquiry into the president through various committees if the Democrats would take control of the House?
Well, if the Democrats continue on the path they're on now by focusing on Mr. Trump and not on the issues, I do not believe they're going to have a majority in the House. Number two, I don't think this election cycle is a referendum on Donald Trump. I think most people are interested in what's in it for them. Mm-hmm. And they're not really – there are some diehards that are making this election about Trump. But that's a false issue, and that's a dead end as far as I'm concerned.
No matter which way the House goes in November, the atmosphere will likely remain contentious. How would you work with colleagues from the other party to tackle pressing issues in Congress?
Well, I'm a listener. I've trained myself to listen, and that's the first step towards reaching a compromise. You've got to listen. You've got to get the other side talking. You got to sit there and be quiet and patiently bring it all in, ask some probing questions in order to get more information, and then you'll reach a compromise.
Certainly, there is a partisan divide on the $1.5 trillion tax cut enacted last year, and polls consistently show less than half of the country approves of it. What is your message to voters about the impact of these tax cuts and if they should remain in place?
Well, I think all you have to do is look at our gross domestic product. We're at close to 4% right now, 3.9. A year ago, I'm sure we were at 3 or less. And so these are the types of policies that we must continue to make in order to get us out of this malaise that we are in as being the world's second economy, actually third if you consider the European Union. We're number 3. And this is not good. This is a very dangerous situation, Tom.
And just piggybacking on that, generally speaking, how would you rate the health of the U.S. economy right now? And if elected, what would you do or what would your priorities be to make it stronger?
Well, what we've done is we've arrested the decline. Okay, that we've arrested the decline, the drift into socialism. I hate to use that word, but that's what it is. It's socialism. And then going forward, I would do sort of what's being done now is gradually remove government out of the private business sector, less regulation, less licensing, less uneven selective enforcement of laws and rules. And as we free up our economy and we bring more competition in, people have more choices, the prices of assets come down, and people have more money in their pockets to invest.
A Pew Research Center poll earlier this summer found immigration to be the top concern among voters heading into these midterms. That issue obviously touches on a number of topics, the status of the DACA program, separations of families at the border, to the funding of President Trump's border wall, which the president has threatened a government shutdown over. If elected, what approach toward immigration would you seek to pursue in Congress?
Well, I don't know if immigration is really central on everybody's agenda. Again, I think people are more concerned with the everyday issue of how much money, you know, do I have to spend? Am I going to make it this month? Am I going to be able to pay my car payment and mortgage and feed my kids and things like that? I'm all for building that wall, Tom, but I want to make sure it has a lot of doors in it.
And healthcare, also high up on the list of voter concerns, according to polling. Arguments in a Texas case that could strike down the Affordable Care Act as unconstitutional will be heard this fall. If that suit succeeds, though, it would also eliminate some popular ACA provisions like protections for young people with – or should say protections for people with pre-existing conditions. With that possibility as a backdrop, what do you see as the appropriate path forward when it comes to addressing health care in this country?
Well, health care, if you've read my latest statement in our the News Journal, is my three main concerns are – defense, the economy, and health care. Those are my three main concerns. And you won't find a conservative talking about health care too much, except to get rid of Obamacare. But we've got to do something about socialized medicine, pain, Obamacare is the wrong approach. What we want to do is bring more private providers into the market so that people can choose. And that brings prices down. And so in order to do that, you got to get the government out of the picture and go back the way it was 30, 40, 50 years ago, where you had private insurers providing insurance. You had no thing like Medicaid. Medicare was not expanded the way it is now. And this is going to bring the price of health care down, Tom. That's what we need to do.
And finally, is there an issue you feel is not getting the attention it deserves in this election cycle, and how would you address it if elected?
Well, again, I would say that health care is being ignored, and that was a great good of you to bring it up, because Americans are in terrible physical condition. We have to import millions of immigrants in order to do our hard workforce because Americans aren't fit enough to do it. And so our health care system is an abject failure. And it's not working. Americans are getting more unhealthy by the year. And pretty soon it's going to impact our security. And that's why if I'm elected, I'm going to be running a robust constituent services operation. People are going to call in. They're going to get answers for why they're not in good health and why they can't work and what's wrong. And that's why I'm running. And if I get elected again, I'm going to get a Delaware back on his feet again.
Thanks to Scott Walker, Republican candidate for U.S. House, for his time. Next up on The Green, political analysts Tom Kovach and Daryl Scott rejoin us to take a deeper look into some of this week's key primaries. You're listening to Delaware Public Media. This is a special edition of The Green on Delaware Public Media, and I'm your host, Tom Byrne. We continue our coverage of this week's Delaware primary by digging a bit deeper into the races with Delaware Public Media political analysts Republican Tom Kovach and Democrat Daryl Scott. Kovach is a former North Wilmington State Representative and Newcastle County Council President and previously ran for U.S. House. Scott is a former State Representative from the Dover area. Today, we get their take on some of the legislative primaries that are happening this Thursday around the state. I want to spend the remaining time we have in this particular roundtable to talk about the legislature. I'll start with you, Daryl. Are there a couple of primary races that stand out to you? I mean, I know there's a lot of them, so we're going to try to winnow it down to a couple, because we will talk about some of these other races right as we head toward November, but a couple that really kind of jump out to you?
So I'll start in the House. There's a number in the House, but the incumbent in the first, Charles Potter, being challenged by Namdi Chuwaka. And so I think that that's one that we'll want to watch and be aware of. There's been sort of money raised and sort of a level of interest in an activity that could make that that be an interesting race to look at. You've got some Krista Griffith and Rachel Bloomfield that's vying to run against Hensley in the ninth. So I think that's there's been a lot of money raised and a lot of interest and sort of you got Labor endorsed in one and DSA in another. So it'll be an interesting race to watch. And then two other in the city are just the Marshall and Rose Henry replacements. Those primaries, it'll be interesting to see how many votes the winner gets to be the next senator serving in those two Senate districts. I would expect a very few number of people will end up deciding who's going to serve because there's not a Republican opponent. And
right. That the decision is now.
It's now, September 6th.
How about you, Tommy? Any races that kind of jump out to you in the legislative field?
Yeah, in kind of my neck of the woods up here, the multi-Democratic primary to replace Brian Short is very interesting. You have a kind of a diversified field of candidates for the Democrats, which it's very nice to see, kind of a diversity in positions and backgrounds and everything else. But do those supporters then, can they coalesce the 7th District, which is not great in registration, but has shown a propensity to elect a Republican? Does that leave an opening, whoever that winner is, and there's no clear front runner that we can sense, in the 7th, does that leave that open for a successful challenge by Eric Braunstein, who, has some connections and a business experience in the area and in the district? So I'm particularly watching that one in the House. I'm kind of excited by a Senate primary, the Democratic Senate primary. The young man, Jordan Hines, who I've just been incredibly impressed with, running an incredibly positive campaign, is receiving a lot of endorsements that I've seen. I'd be interested to see what Daryl thinks about that one. But, very positive, very turnout-dependent race, I would think.
Are your thoughts on that since he asked?
it is one of the ones that I could have listed. And again, you've got education on one side, you've got labor on the other, you've got the bus controversy in the city of Wilmington, mm-hmm. you've got contractors and labor. I mean, it's going to be an interesting dynamic to see how that works out. And it's one that the Democrats are looking at very closely as well. And if I can make one clarification, I said Hensley for the Bloomfield and Griffith race, and it's actually it's the Democratic primary to run in the 12th to face off against Deb Hudson.
Okay. Yeah. And then the other race I just wanted to get a quick word from both of you on is the 22nd House, the Joe Moreau seats, which has a primary on both sides with some names that are familiar, some fresh faces. I'll start with you, Tom. Your thoughts on that race from the Republican perspective?
Yeah, no, I think from what I've sensed, unlike our United States Senate primary, that has been very congenial, very positive. Very much like to see two younger candidates, kind of fresh faces, people that have enough experience in the business community, but yet. Not trying to woo an extreme of the party, but just trying to communicate their values. I enjoy that. I enjoy them campaigning, the positive campaign. I think Mike Smith, he's done this before. He had to jump in last minute when another candidate had dropped out. But, I think he's worked. He's a Castle acolyte. He's worked with a Castle campaign, so I think he's bringing his experience there, and his young family has really been supportive, and I really like his chances in that race. But again, not to diminish the other candidate, I think they've been both acquitted themselves very well.
That other candidate is Kathy Beard. How about on the Democratic side?
On the Democratic side, again, we've got two very strong candidates. It'll be interesting to see how the race unfolds with Tashner, who ran for, I guess, Newcastle County. So she's got some name recognition, potentially advantage. Although Guillermino Gonzalez is well known within the community, and so and from what I'm hearing, it's a positive race. Again, DSEA has weighed in on supporting one of the candidates, so it'll be interesting to see what the teachers union's endorsement
means.
I mean, it typically means mail and potentially some help getting out the vote, and so that could it'd be interesting to see how that that race plays out. But to Tom's point, it's nice to see sort of a good, clean campaign focused on the issues and absent the sort of the personal attacks and vying for an open seat. So it'll be interesting to watch.
And finally, I'll leave you guys with this question. Is there anything else you guys will be watching next week on Thursday night as the results come in? Is there something that you're thinking of that may tell you something about anything during that primary as we watch those results come in? Tom, I'll start with you.
I think, as we've mentioned, turnout's going to be key. Can these candidates, many of them very hardworking, have not been seeing a lot of news and excitement in the general community? Can they get the word out to enough registered party supporters to make a difference for them? I think turnout will be key for several of these candidates in quite frankly, both sides, but even more so importantly in the Democratic primaries.
Yeah, how about you?
And unfortunately, I say this because it's not going to be interesting, but I agree with Tom. I mean, that turnout was the one word that I had in mind to say that it's a Thursday. Again, turnout can sort of be a huge factor in if it's low and sort of a few votes make a difference. And so I'll be watching for the turnout to see, given all the news about Democratic year and excitement and the progressives making sort of waves in, across the country. Let's see how that translates to Delaware on September 6th.
Thanks to Delaware Public Media political analysts Tom Kovac and Daryl Scott. We'll hear more from them during our primary night coverage this Thursday night, September 6th. And stay with us. More primary coverage is coming up on The Green here on Delaware Public Media.
Thanks for spending time with us on this special edition of The Green. I'm Tom Byrne. With Republican State Representative Joe Moreau retiring after 20 years in the State House, the 22nd House district he represented is up for grabs. And the vacancy has drawn four contenders, two on the Democratic side and two on the Republican. Yesterday, we met the Democrats running. Today, Delaware Public Media's Sophia Schmidt introduces us to the Republicans facing off in this week's primary.
Republican State Representative candidate Kathy Beard is running for elected office for the first time.
There's a lot of need in our communities. I definitely have seen that in my volunteer work.
She saw Joe Moreau's retirement as the perfect chance to get more involved. Her opponent in next week's primary, Mike Smith, ran unsuccessfully for the 22nd district seat in 2014. He saw this year's race as an opportunity.
We don't like the direction where Delaware is headed. We've focused on a lot of issues that are good for folks, but if you're not focusing on jobs, then the rest of the stuff, how do you do it? We're just worried our kids won't want to live here.
The two Republicans agree on several issues, including one unresolved during last legislative session.
We should 100% do budget smoothing. It just makes logical sense.
What it does is it allows us to take a surplus in a year when we have more money than expected and be able to put that aside for another budget year when we have a deficit, instead of raising taxes and cutting services.
And both say district residents want change in education. Kathy Beard.
We could look at our funding formulas and how money is distributed based on special needs. There's also opportunities for piloting various initiatives based on what teachers of the year might think is a good idea, or educational research. The Delaware Can organization has some good ideas.
Smith thinks the state has lost its way on education.
So many times it's come down to traditional public schools versus charter schools, and that's not the argument at all. We all have the same goal, and that's to provide a best education for our children.
He sees consolidation as one solution.
School district consolidation is one thing you need to do immediately. Just from a procurement standpoint, that'll save tens of millions of dollars. And then guess what? Let's take all that money and pour it right directly back into our classrooms.
Both candidates see healthcare as a big issue. Beard says she'll work on improving mental health care options and reducing medical malpractice insurance costs.
That will also help us with availability, as doctors are tending to move out of state because of their insurance rates being so high. I would also like to look at turning around the very high rates of infant mortality and maternal mortality.
Smith points to his work at the University of Delaware Star Campus, where he modeled a prevention and wellness partnership with the business community.
Did that lead to more efficiency at work? Yes, it did. Did that lower your health care costs for you and your family members? Yes, it did.
Smith bills himself as strong on economic development. He serves on county and state level economic development councils and committees and has developed a legislative proposal for what he calls the first state innovation zone.
We really are what is a hotbed for the rest of America. You have the farms, you have the big city, if you will, in Wilmington. You have this big bio life science, health sciences corridor developing down there at the Star Campus. And I think if you put all of those things collectively and merge it with the top tier research that's coming out, so if we get an infusion of capital, I think we can reinvent Delaware in a really nice and collective way.
He also hopes to get more money to improve infrastructure in his district.
We actually have the second most interior roads here in the whole state of Delaware in District 22. The problem with that is every legislator gets the same amount of money to go ahead and use for road repair and maintenance every year.
Beard wants the Equal Rights Amendment passed and to improve efficiency in state government.
We need to take a stronger look at where we spend our money.
Beard says her background in business would help her compromise and negotiate across the aisle.
I've worked in so many roles with so many different kinds of people. I can work to agree on solutions to the problems that we have.
She thinks her ability to listen to constituents would help her appeal to Democrats.
People talk about divisiveness, but I'm really not seeing that. I'm seeing a lot of commonality of what people are looking for.
Mike Smith and Kathy Beard face off in the Republican primary election on September 6th. Sophia Schmidt, Delaware Public Media.
Thanks, Sophia. And that's a wrap on this special edition of The Green. The interviews and stories you've heard are online right now at DelawarePublic.org. Just head to The Green's page on our website. And remember, you can also check out The Green via podcast at our website, on iTunes, and on the NPR One app. Thanks to all those who helped make today's show possible, political analysts Tom Kovac and Daryl Scott, as well as Delaware Public Media's Sophia Schmidt. For all of them and the rest of the staff here at Delaware Public Media, I'm Tom Byrne saying thanks for joining us, And a reminder, we'll have full primary night coverage coming your way this Thursday night, September 6th, starting at 8 o'clock when the polls close. We hope you'll tune in for that. And we'll see you again next time on The Green, where Delaware explores its common ground.